What if this life isn't the end of our story? Join us in our new series, Life After Life, as we examine life, death, and what comes next for each of us. And now, here's today's message.
Hey everyone, good morning. Happy 4th of July weekend. Let me welcome you to Northgate. I'm really glad you're with us this morning. It's going to be a good morning. Before we get in to the new series and the message, two things I wanted to share with you. One is last Sunday at 11:03, so right after the second service started, Tara and Brennan had their baby, and Tara and Brennan, yeah, you can clap for that. Eleonora Jane, and I don't know like heights and weights because I'm a guy, so it was a girl, I gave you the name, and the time even, so how much do you want from me? But we're really excited for them, and Tara and Eleonora are doing well, and so they're people that have really grown up here in the church, you know, and so it's fun and it's an exciting thing. Next thing, I feel like I should say something, and I'm not sure if I can, but then we'll get into the message. As a lot of you know, one of my children, my youngest daughter, was bit by a dog last night in her face, and it was pretty extensive. So for those of you that have been praying and knew that, thank you for your support. We're just overwhelmed by the support. It was really bad. We're really blessed with the Great Children's Hospital in this area, and we had a facial trauma team come and a plastic surgeon do a lot of work last night, and so she's resting, and we appreciate your prayer, your support, your love. I often say I don't know how people get through stuff like that without the support of a church family, and we're really honored to have you as our church family, so pray for her. She and Amy are home resting. It was a very long, late night. And if it's cool with you, I'm going to just lighten it up a little bit and talk about death now, okay? Is that good? I feel like I can keep it together if I talk about death. Let's just not talk about my daughters. It's a little bit of a soft spot in my heart. So we are in a series called Life After Life, and this is the first week. We're just starting it, Life After Life, and we're asking the question, what comes next? What comes next after death? And one of the things I'm really excited about that I kind of teased last week is in this series, we're going to address a bunch of things. You know, we're going to talk about death not being the end, and we're going to talk about heaven and hell and rewards and judgment and some other things. But for the fifth week, the last weekend in July, you can submit questions, and we will be answering your questions during the message. So the whole message really relies on you guys submitting good questions. But we will do that. Pastor Vernon and I will field those. Somebody asked me, well, do you have all the answers? And I said, well, no, I have some of the answers, and Pastor Vern has the rest of them. So that's kind of the game plan going forward with that. Two ways you can do that are really easy. One, if you have the Northgate app, which at this point, if you don't, I don't know what you're doing. We can talk about that. But go to wherever you get apps and just look at Northgate FMC. If you have that app, right on the front page in the bottom right, there's a place where it says Life After Life. You can click that, submit questions. You don't have to put your name on it if you don't want to. You can if you'd like. If you are not an app person, if you're more like into naps than apps, there is, you can be into both. There are cards. I'm on like 2.5 hours of sleep, which could be great or terrible. You let me know when we're done. There are cards at the information desk, and so you can just write them out there. You can put your question on. Same thing, if you want to put your name, feel free. Don't feel like you have to, and you can turn that in right there. But we're excited to do that because the whole point, we want to address the questions that you have about this. And so please make sure to do that. You might put some in that we address during the series, which is cool too, but when we get to week 5, that is what we're going to do. Today, the message is that death is not the end. That's where we're going to start. We're going to kind of build the scaffolding for this up, and we have to start with that idea that death is not the end. Now, death is not really a fun thing to talk about. It's not a thing that we like to talk about, but it is a really important thing to talk about because very few things in life are 100%. I'm going to give you some things in life that are not 100%, okay? I would like to think that 100% of people don't think that medical and pharmaceutical industries invent new diseases just to make money. That's not true. Only 85% of people actually believe that. So you can see, I would also like to think that 100% of people don't believe in Bigfoot. Not true. 86% of people do not believe in Bigfoot. And if you do, I'm glad you're here. Like, don't worry, we can still be friends. I would like to think I would have assumed that 100% of people thought that the government only put fluoride in our water for dental health purposes. Not true. 91% of people believe that. 9% think that there's some more sinister reasons for putting that in our water. And then this one, I was really blown away by this one. 95% of people don't believe that the exhaust seen in the sky behind an airplane is actually chemicals sprayed by the government. 5% of people believe that the exhaust behind the airplane is chemicals sprayed by the government. So very few things, very little, is actually 100% in life. But no matter who you are, no matter what conspiracies you may believe, again, I'm really glad you're here if you believe this, no matter what your background, no matter how much money you make, no matter what your level of education is, whether you're a blue-collar, white-collar worker, whether you're a Democrat, Republican, anything else, unless Jesus comes back before that day, all of us are going to die at some point, 100%. Now, I want to say this in the most non-alarmist way as possible, and don't run out. We're all going to die, okay? And I just feel like you need to know that. There's a quote in Fight Club, which we can't talk about too much, but it says, on a long enough timeline, the survival rate for everyone drops to zero. And that's kind of the point, right? So we can do a series on marriage, and sometimes we do. We can do series on raising children. And some people are like, well, I'm not married, and I don't have children. We can do series on other things that doesn't necessarily apply to everyone else. But this one does. This one does. We all encounter death. Death has an impact on us, and sometimes it starts in different ways. I was trying to remember my first real encounter with death, and it involves a little girl running down a stairway, and she says, his face hurts. And wear his glasses. He can't see without his glasses. Put his glasses on. Put his glasses on. He was going to be an acrobat. Anybody? Where's the children of the 90s? My girl? Come on. I was going to use the video clip for that, but I thought I'd cry. And that was before I had a really rough weekend. I remember watching that movie and like encountering death, even in the form of a movie. And I remember I was like trying to be tough, you know, I'm like, oh man. And I look and I'm with my cousin and one of my best friends at the time, and they're both weeping. And I saw that and I just let it go, man. I just opened the floodgates and let it go because I didn't have a lot of experience with death. But despite death being such a common part of life, so many people avoid the topic. I mean, how often do we really think about what happens to someone after they die? Probably when someone close to us dies, but in general, we don't really think about it that often. I like what Woody Allen said. A lot of people resonate with this. He said, it's not that I'm afraid to die. I just don't want to be there when it happens. And that makes sense to me, right? I mean, that's cool. I just want to hear about it later. But there are people that will put off doing their will, because they think that by doing a will, they're somehow making it more likely that they will die. Like, well, if I get my affairs in order, then that's actually not true. I need you to know that. Estate planners say about 70% of Americans die without a will, which is crazy. If you've taken FPU, I hope that you're in the 30% with me. You've got to do that. It's a good way to love the people that love you well, especially if you are leaving children behind, possibly. Goodness, make sure that that is taken care of. That's a side note, but you need to know that. Get your will set. But there are two things that a whole lot of people dislike. A lot of people, they dislike the unknown, right? We can agree on that. And a lot of people dislike change. And I would challenge you to find something that qualifies as a bigger unknown or a bigger change than dying, right? That's a pretty big unknown and a pretty big change. Jesus talked about a lot of stuff. And he talked about a lot of things that a lot of other people didn't like to talk about. And death was one of those. And we have a passage here in John 5 where he's talking about the authority that he has and he's talking about the coming judgments. And look at what he says in John 5 that kind of makes our main point today. He said, "Do not be amazed at this, for a time is coming when all who are in their graves will hear his voice and come out. Those who have done what is good will rise to live, and those who have done what is evil will rise to be condemned." So Jesus says very clearly, not only will everyone die, but he says what our main point is this morning, everyone is going to spend eternity somewhere. It's very clear. He says, death is not the end. This isn't it. This existence that we have, that we know right now, this isn't it. When your body dies, your soul will live on. Now, this is merely a temporary house for your soul. And some people were like, well, that's good news, right? It's like a lease on a car, and you've been pretty rough on the car, and you're like, good, that term's almost up, right? I'm going to trade that in for a new one. That can be really good news. I think people resonate with that more and more as time goes on, right? Where you start looking forward to that new house for your soul. There's a quote out there, and there's some people on the internet who want to make sure you know C.S. Lewis didn't really say it, but I like it, whether he said it or not. The quote is, you do not have a soul. You are a soul. You have a body. And that kind of puts us into perspective of what is really real and what will continue on. Our spirit will continue, but our body will die, which ends our current existence. Now, some of these things are not, you know, 100%. There are people that disagree, and there's people that have other opinions, but I'm the only one with the microphone in here right now, so let me just say it, and we can still be friends if you disagree with me on this, but I believe that there will be an immediate consciousness after death, both in heaven and in hell, and there's a couple reasons why I would think that. You know, Jesus to the thief on the cross, if you remember that, he said, today you will be with me in paradise. And that, for me, that makes me think, okay, when you die, there's some kind of existence immediately. In 2 Corinthians 5, it says, we are absent from the body, but we are present with the Lord. But isn't there something inherent in us that wants that? Like, not to minimize the good things of this life. There are great things in this life. There are great parts of this life. There are rewarding parts of everything. But isn't there something in us that desires for there to be more than just this? That desires for there just to be more than just this life? In our passage here in John 5, Jesus says that's not only a reality. Very clearly, he says that's a two-pronged reality. So there's only two choices. He said there are those who have done what is good, and there are those who have done what is evil. Now, always really important that we don't get confused into a works-based theology. I want to make sure you're clear, because you say, okay, if you've done good or if you've done evil, that's the split. But in verse 24, just a couple verses before we looked at Jesus said, whoever hears my word and believes him who sent me has eternal life and will not be judged, but is crossed over from death to life. So clearly we know the standard of what is good is believing in Jesus Christ and in God that sent him. But it's a fork in the road for everyone. It's so clear. It's not, okay, one, those that have done good, two, those that have done evil, and then a third group of people who just don't believe all this kind of stuff. That's not it. It's two groups, one and two. And so for me, this is kind of great for me. I'm going to be honest. This is a good weekend to preach, because a lot of times I feel like I'm up here trying to convince you of something. I'll come up and I'll try and convince you that if you would forgive people that really need to be forgiven, that your life would be better and that you'll be better off. Or I'll come up and try and convince you that your life would be better if you would just try things God's way. But I don't really need to do that with this, because this is going to be equally true for all of us, whether you believe me or not. So it kind of like takes the pressure off, right? You can think I'm totally nuts, and you will still die someday, and you will spend eternity somewhere, whether or not I'm successful in convincing you of that this morning. So I'm just going to kind of take it easy up here, if that's cool with you. So do you want the good news or the bad news? Do you guys do that in your house? Do you want the good news? We do that all the time. Good news or bad news? What do you want first? Good news. All right. Well, we got to do a little bit of bad news. All right. We'll start with the good news, because that's what's in the notes first. Here's the good news. Heaven is real. Like, that is good news. Heaven, a continual, eternal dwelling with God, will be a reality for some. And there's a lot of places we could go with this, but let's go to 1 Thessalonians 4:13-18. Brothers and sisters, we do not want you to be uninformed about those who sleep in death. Now, every time he says sleep, he's going to keep talking about sleep. He means that they have died. So that you do not grieve like the rest of mankind who have no hope. For we believe that Jesus died and rose again, and so we believe that God will bring with Jesus those who have fallen asleep in him. According to the Lord's word, we tell you that we who are still alive, who are left until the coming of the Lord, will certainly not precede those who have fallen asleep. For the Lord himself will come down from heaven with a loud command, with the voice of the archangel and the trumpet call of God, and the dead in Christ will rise first. Then it finishes saying, after that, we who are still alive and are left will be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air. And so we will be with the Lord forever. Therefore, encourage one another with these words. I love that we will be with the Lord forever, because that is the essence of heaven, is this continual dwelling with God forever. Revelation 21, it talks about a time where there will be no more death, and there'll be no more mourning, there'll be no more crying, there'll be no more pain. There's this beautiful picture that I think the longer you live in the world and the more you understand the world, the more appealing that is to be in that spot with none of those things. Now, some people believe, as this passage would seem to indicate, that heaven is somewhere up in the sky, right? The people in the balcony this morning get a little bit of a head start, that it's up there. And this passage said we will all be caught together with them in the clouds. Others believe that heaven will be established here on earth, and the Bible talks in many places about a new heaven and a new earth. And in week four of this series, we're just going to talk about heaven. You can submit your questions about that too, and we'll do our best to unpack all of that then. But for now, let's just establish that based on the Bible, that heaven is real, and that is really good news. That is good news. But I do need to give you the other half of that coin, because the bad news, as you're probably figuring, is that hell is real too. In the second book to the same church, 2 Thessalonians, here's what Paul says in chapter 1, 8 through 10. He will punish those who do not know God and do not obey the gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ. They will be punished with everlasting destruction and shut out from the presence of the Lord and from the glory of his might on the day he comes to be glorified in his holy people and to be marveled at among all those who have believed. This includes you because you believed our testimony to you. Now that, again, a pretty good summary of heaven, that it'd be everlasting destruction and shut out from the presence of the Lord. So it's pretty clear that people will be punished in that way with everlasting destruction by being shut out from the presence of God forever. Because whether you intend to or not, refusing to trust and obey God and his Son, it communicates only one thing to God. God, I don't want anything to do with you. Whether that's your purpose in doing it, whether that's intentional, or whether it's a passive thing, when we refuse to trust and obey God and trust and obey Jesus, we're saying, God, I don't want anything to do with you. Now, in order to properly understand this, I think we have to go all the way back to the beginning of the Bible, where we see that God created humans in his image. Right? He created us in his image, and God is a God of choices. He is a God of choices, and so he's a God that gave us all free will, and part of that free will, part of what we can choose is we have the freedom to choose him or the freedom to not choose him. And that's actually kind of what life is all about, is this idea of if you will choose to believe and follow God. Life on earth is nothing more than an incubation period where we either choose whether or not we want to spend eternity with God or spend eternity separated from him. J.P. Moreland has this quote that I really like. This really resonates with me for a couple reasons. He said, God maintains a delicate balance between keeping his existence sufficiently evident so that people will know he's there. Got that, right? If you want to follow God, if you want to find God, you can see him. If you're looking for him, there's sufficient evidence so people will know he's there. And then the rest of the quote says, and yet, hiding his presence enough so that people who want to choose to ignore him can do it. And that's exactly how God operates. Sometimes people will say to me, well, if God would just, you know, come down through the clouds, if he would just get some time on cable TV and say, here I am, I'm real, everyone can see me, they would say, then I would be able to believe. And I said, well, that you're missing the point, because then there wouldn't be a real choice. I tell them, God is going to come back through the clouds and you're going to have that moment, but it's not going to happen in the way that you want, where he kind of lets you know, like he shows you the answers on the quiz. He is existent enough that when we look for him, when we seek him, we will find him, but also it's in a way that if people want to ignore him, they can do it. He hides his presence enough so that people who choose to ignore him can do it. But we know that hell is real, and hell is a continual and eternal separation from God. In the Bible, it talks about things like weeping, it talks about gnashing of teeth, a lake of fire, endless darkness. People always want to know if those are metaphors or if those are literal. I do not know. I'm planning to never find out. But we know that all good has been removed. Happiness, joy, hope, love, things like that have all been removed. They are non-existent in addition to God not being present. Now, this is where some people say, well, okay, but I'm just not comfortable with that. I'm not comfortable. I can't believe that a loving God would send someone to hell. I have a few responses. One, I would tell you that God would not send someone to hell. I would say that he would give them the choice. But two, what you're comfortable with and what is true don't have to be the same thing. I fail to understand. It might be an American mindset where we somehow think that we're entitled that the truth should line up with what we're comfortable with. Because I can think of a lot of things. I mean, are you comfortable with children dying around the world from a lack of water and preventable diseases? I'm not comfortable with that. But it doesn't make it any less existent just because I don't like it, just because it makes me feel uneasy in my spirit. I mean, there's a lot of things that I'm not comfortable with, and it hasn't seemed to impact whether or not they exist. God has never consulted me and said, John, before I do this, are you comfortable with this? Like, I'm not comfortable with mushrooms. I'm not comfortable with rye bread. I'm not comfortable with the Yankees winning 5 World Series in my lifetime that I've had to sit through and watch. But, I mean, if I try to be as uncomfortable as I can be, that doesn't take those titles away, and you're lucky for that because I would do it quickly. But it doesn't matter. I'm not trying to be insensitive, but when someone says that they aren't comfortable with something and they act like that somehow impacts the reality, it drives me crazy. I have that conversation with my kids all the time where they'll say, well, but I don't want to. And my response is, what you want to do and what we're actually going to do probably aren't the same thing, right? Like, sometimes those things line up, and that's great, right? That's really good. But a lot of times, they don't. What you're comfortable with and what is true don't have to be the same thing. And this is one of those cases. So the proper response to me feeling uncomfortable about something isn't to create a new narrative that's more assuring or more palatable to me. The reasonable thing to do is to admit that hell is real, and then allow those feelings to motivate me to action, which is going to give us, we're going to have bonus good news. I want to give you 2 pieces of good news. So here's the other piece of good news. You get to choose where you will spend eternity. You get to choose, and that's really good news. Now, I want to say, and I need to because of my background, avoiding hell is, in my opinion, probably the worst possible motivation for choosing Jesus. It really is. I grew up so scared of hell. We had a fire video when I was in 2nd grade, and it was really traumatic, and I was like, I remember being up all night, my parents were so mad, because it was like this really graphic burning video, and so what would be worse than that forever? And so I just grew up so scared of going to hell, and I had no desire to follow Jesus. I just really didn't want to find out about the lake of fire. And so I would go to camp, and you'd hear these like fire and brimstone sermons, and you know, I remember, you're going to think I'm exaggerating, but I remember like puppet shows where they were acting stuff out and they lit a puppet on fire and I was like, oh my gosh, I gotta get saved so fast. And that was my motivation. It wasn't about Jesus. It was just about, you know, fire insurance. It was about avoiding hell when I died. And I remember being like, okay, God, like tearfully, I'd be like, please make sure that I never ever go there. And I did that a lot. Like there was one year, I'm not overly proud to tell you this, but one year VBS at our church, if you got saved, you got to pick something out of the prize box. I went 5 for 5 that week, man. 5 times. I was like, I get eternal, I don't have to go to hell, and I can get a pencil out of this box. It was wonderful. All my school supplies were done by the end of the week. But then somebody told me at a camp, they said, well, if you ask God to save you and you've already done that, then you cancel it out. And just for the record, that's really bad theology, okay? They said, you cancel it out. So then I had this like panic attack where I'm going through and I'm trying to figure out, it's like a daffodil, right? I'm like, he saved me, he saved me not. How many times have I been to camp? You know, I'm trying to figure this out. And that was my motivation for wanting to follow God. Now, if that is you, if you feel that like, man, okay, hell sounds bad, I want to follow Jesus, do me one favor. It's only going to take you about a half an hour. Last summer, we did a series called Dear Church, if you remember that, where we all gave one message. If we could only give one message for the rest of our life, what would that message be? And because of my background, mine was that a relationship with Jesus isn't just about avoiding hell when you die. It's about living the life that is truly life right now. And I believe that so deeply, and God has really transformed my heart from where I came to where I am now. And so if you struggle on that same line, go back and watch that message. If you can't find it on the app or something, send me a message and I'll send it to you. Because Romans 14:12, it says, every one of us will give an account to God for our life. We will give an account of if we've used that free will that he gave us to accept and follow him, or if we've used it to reject and ignore him. But know that God didn't send Jesus to create a standard that we could fall short of so that he had probable cause to send us to eternal suffering. That is not the heart of God, and that is not what he did. He sent him to save the world. You know the first verse here in John 3:16, but I really want to look at the middle verse. For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish but have eternal life. And look at this. For God did not send his Son into the world to condemn the world, but to save the world through him. That's his heart. It's from love. It's to save us. Whoever believes in him is not condemned, but whoever does not believe stands condemned already because they have not believed in the name of God's one and only Son. So please know very clearly that hell is not what God wants for any of us. And it is not what he would choose for us if it was his choice. But he is a God of choices. And he is a fair and just God. And he could not be fair and just and force someone who spent their life ignoring him to then spend eternity in his presence. It would not be fair of God to say, you've ignored me with all the choices you have, now you will be with me forever. That doesn't make sense. And that's not who he is. So we know that heaven is real, we know that hell is real, but we also know that we get to choose where we will spend eternity, and that is beyond good news, that is great news. And I want you to know that the work has been done for you. You need only to accept the gift of grace from Jesus, and when you do that, in doing that, you make the choice of what your life after life will look like. So what are the implications of this? What are the implications if we truly believe this? Let me give you a couple implications. One, it should change how we live. If we really believe that death is not the end, that we will all spend eternity somewhere, we believe that heaven and hell is real and we get to make that choice, it should change how we live. I mean, doesn't it have to? Just logically, if you are going to be somewhere for 60, 70, 80, 100 years, and you're going to live somewhere else for 10,000 years and be no closer to the end than you were when you began, wouldn't it be a little bit crazy to let the things of those 60, 70, 80, or 100 years overwhelm you in a way that they become too important to you? Now, I'm not telling you that things of this world don't matter. I'm not saying, you know, go out and quit your job and leave your family. Like, those things are super important. But I am telling us that we need to keep those things in an eternal perspective. We need to keep our long-term lens on that, right? We need to not be looking down. We need to be looking up. And we need to have that kind of view when we look at things. Because here's the second implication. It should change what we value. It should change what we value. I'm not telling you that nothing else on earth matters. But constantly be evaluating those things from an eternal perspective. Evaluate those things. Because when you invest in your kids, when you invest in your family, when you invest in the children of Rwanda, that is something that has eternal value. It matters now. You better believe it matters right now to them, but it matters in the future, and it has an eternal value. I always want to be looking. I want to be looking at my calendar. I want to be looking at my, you know, my checkbook. It's online because it's, you know, not the 70s. But I want to be looking at where we're spending our money, and I want to see, am I investing in things that have an eternal value, or am I just looking right in front of me right now? And then here's the third thing. It should change how we view death. The implication of this is that it should change how we view death. Because one of my favorite verses that we read in 1 Thessalonians 4, it says, we don't grieve as those without hope. Now, don't miss that, because it doesn't say we don't grieve, right? It doesn't say there's no sadness. That's a picture of heaven that was painted, right? It doesn't say that we don't do those things. It says we don't grieve as those without hope. And so please, don't hear me biblically saying that you're not supposed to grieve. We do. But we grieve differently when we know that death is not the end. We grieve differently for those that we know that have put their faith and hope in Jesus Christ. So here's your takeaway. Here's what I want you to walk out of here with today. Live with the hope and priorities of someone that knows that life doesn't end with death. Live with that. Live with both that hope that is uncommon in this world and the priorities that are different than what your neighbors are and what your coworkers are and what other people are. Live with the hope and priorities of someone that knows this is not it. Death is not the end. The last three funerals that I've done were for a 39-year-old, a 37-year-old, and a 20-year-old. And death is pretty bad. You know, death is awful. And when you're in those situations and you're looking family members in the face who know they should have had another 40, 50, 60 years with this person, death, it gets a hold of you and it's dark and it's tough. And I remember going through those and trying to bring hope and encouragement to the family, which only Jesus can bring. I just try and be a conduit of that. But then I had a different experience a little bit ago with death, because we were in the office, and Pastor Greg was gone, and that was tough because we're really spoiled by how well he handles these kind of situations. Somebody called the church, and they were about to say goodbye to their mom, and they wanted to know if someone could just come over and be with the family and pray with them. And so I was like, man, if they're expecting a priest, I rolled in there in like flip-flops and a t-shirt and shorts, but it was an incredible time because this woman was 99 and a half years old, and her children were there, and she was someone who had lived with the hope and priorities of that knew that life did not end with her death. And we stood there with her family, and they talked about what an incredible woman of God she was and how devoted she was in her devotions and how her relationship with God led them to their relationships with God. And they talked about this family that came from this, you know, from this woman. And they talked about her life and her dedication to Jesus and her dedication to the church. And it was incredible. And I got to tell you, as weird as it might sound, being a part of that was a huge blessing to my soul to again see that death is not the end, to see a life that was lived well and was lived long, and that when death came, it was sad, they were sad, but they were also celebrating because we knew that as we held her hand there and we prayed together and we sang together, that when she took that last breath, everyone in that room knew where she was going to be and what her eternal future was going to look like. I want you to live like that. Not just if you're 99 and a half, if you're 9, if you're 39, if you're 59, wherever you are in there, I want you to live as someone that has the hope and the priorities that they know that life does not end with death. Let's pray.
Thank you for joining us on the Northgate Podcast. We hope this message has been a blessing to you as you walk and grow in your relationship with Jesus Christ. For other great resources, explore our website at northgatefmc.com and come back next week for another great message. Have a wonderful week.